Hello, everyone.
What is up, good people of the council?
Hey, everybody.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Ed, you gonna play for us? Is he playing an organ?
It looks like it.
That's brilliant.
What?
I was wondering what you were playing. It looks like an organ.
Yes. It was an agreement. My husband hated the trumpet in close quarters, so I'm teaching myself the organ.
Oh, well, why don't you play some music for us to start the meeting with?
Because I've been practicing for just a little bit. I will be happy to give you a sound, but that will be it. Remember, we're talking about Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star.
Extremely inspirational.
I'm great.
Here's some Johann Sebastian Bach.
Who?
Johann Sebastian Bach.
That's my tiny little bit. So I'm embarrassed.
That was lovely. David, I've made you co-host. TJ, can you raise your hand so we can check to make sure that David can see that? No, I mean the hand raising function.
Oh, awesome. Right. Cool.
You see it? Okay, great.
Yeah. Give it a few more minutes for folks to log on.
Hey, David.
Howdy, howdy.
I have to apologize for having my avatar up. It's too difficult for me to sort of prop the phone up for a view, so it requires a little too much strength, but I'm here for a few moments.
Nice to hear you, Mike.
Thanks.
David, it does look like we're going to have a number of participants, so many that it's going to be across two screens. But from what I've seen, the hand raising, when that happens, you actually get a notification at the bottom of your screen that someone has just raised their hand. So that might be one way to track it if someone raises their hands on your current screen.
Cool.
And I wanted to just reply to a question from TJ. There are no minutes from the last meeting. Shelter in place actually happened before they were done. So we'll have to wait until we can access the office, which should be sometime in the future.
All right, I'm gonna give it another minute and then I'll start the show. Do we have quorum?
We're relaxing quorum for this month as we get ourselves started, but it looks like we might be able to have quorum. I'm looking at both screens and we have a lot of people. I think we would actually have quorum even if we weren't being more relaxed this month.
All right, I'll give it another minute because I want to get us out of here in less than 2 hours.
Audible goal.
Mark, this is Gwen. I'm called in. I'm not on the Zoom screen.
I see you. Okay.
All right.
If you're talking to us, David, you're on mute.
Ah, damn it. Damn it. All right, sorry. Hey, so welcome to the March 18th HRB Planning, Community Planning Council full council meeting. We'll get started. So just so that you all know, my first time facilitating such a large group, so bear with me. If you can, please mute your lines and then you know, as we move along, we'll ask you to participate. Also, if you can also, you can also chat as well. Staff and I will be checking the chat boxes, and then please save your questions and comments towards the end of presentations. We don't, you know, so we can then, you know, go through everything and then be able to address everyone who's also on the phones. Secondly, or lastly, let us know if there's any challenges with sort of audio as we move along as well. Okay, great. So getting started, let's do intros. We'll take a roll call. So I think this is Mark's time to shine.
This is definitely my time to shine. So if you can all actually unmute for now so that you could respond when I call your name. Chuck Adams.
Here.
Lauren Allen. Alexandria Andrews.
Here.
Margo Antonetti is excused. Bill, excused. Jackson Bowman. Javon Bright. Ben Kabangan. Cesar Cadabas.
Here.
Ed Chitty. Ed Chitty is here. Billy Cooper. Cicely Emerson. Elaine Flores. Matt Geltmaker.
Here.
David Gonzalez.
Here.
Kevin Hutchcroft.
Here.
Thomas Noble.
Here.
Paul Harkin.
Here.
Ron Hernandez.
I'm here.
Bruce Ito.
Here.
Lee Jewell.
Present.
Juba Kalamka. Lily Purtell.
Here.
Helen Lin.
Here.
Antoine Matthews. TJ Lee Miyake.
Here.
Jesse Murphy. Nay Nascimento. Parada.
Here.
Ken Pierce.
Here.
Darpin Sachdev. Mike Shriver.
Here.
Charles Cerrone is excused, is actually on a leave of absence. Gwen Smith.
Here.
JP Soto.
Here.
Michelle Spence.
Here.
Richard Sullivan.
I'm here.
Eric Sutter.
Here.
Laura Thomas.
Here.
Looks like we do have quorum.
Great. So then let's do to government.
Government? Members of the public?
I'm going to do members of the public also. Any members of the public who are present?
Bill Hirsch, AIDS Legal Referral Panel, and the HIV AIDS Provider Network. Stephen Spano, HCAP, staff attorney at ALRP.
Hollis Fleischer, vocational counselor, PRC.
Dennis Riley, Employment Services, PRC.
Jose Benito, Roy. Employment Specialist, PRC.
Troy Boyd, Employment Specialist at PRC.
All right, fantastic. And then staff, if you can announce yourself.
Our council staff.
Melina Clark, council staff.
Allie Cohn, council staff.
Okay. I'm assuming that's it. And then someone just has not muted. All right, great. Okay, moving on. What else is there, Mark?
I think we approved the agenda. I'll pull that up right now.
Yeah, could you?
Right. Hopefully everyone can see that. If right, for those on the phone, I'll just do a quick review. We had as our first agenda item, roll call, introduction of the public. Second is approval of the agenda. There is no approval of the minutes. Next will be announcements from council members. Fourth will be public comment. Fifth will be general updates, including updates from CHEP, HHS, Getting to Zero, California Planning Group, and the CARE Coalition. Sixth agenda item is a State Office of AIDS update. The seventh is committee updates from the three committees that have met this month. Eight is an election to represent for representatives to the California Planning Group. Nine is our annual report from the HIV Consumer Advocacy Project. 10 is the ending the epidemic community engagement discussion. And then we close.
Great, thank you. So if there's no changes or any sort of other input or objections, I'd like to pass this by consensus. So I'll give it a minute. Or a second, I mean. All right, seeing as there's no input or suggestions, agenda is approved by consensus. Great. So next up on the agenda is announcements. So any, first let's do council members, any announcements coming up? All right. Since there are none, let's go to public comment. I know Bill had something to input, so go ahead, Bill. Bill Hirsch.
Hi, folks. So I think most of you have probably heard that the city has received its award from the federal government for its Ryan White grant. We are looking at a reduction to San Francisco of about $460,000. Which is significantly more than we had planned for. We have been in discussions with the Department of Public Health around how to backfill that
funding and ensure that the services are able to continue. Right now, the intention of the Department of Public Health is to use some of the end the epidemic funding that the city has received. We received about $1 million, which was significantly less than we had requested, but the intention is to use a portion of that funding to cover the backfill. I can say that generally we will be looking at a very different posture with regards to the city budget. Most folks also probably know that the city's budget process has been bumped down a couple months forward. So it'll be August, September when the city's budget is finalized. We are going to be in a much more defensive posture with regards to the city budget. So the items that happen and getting to zero, and the Planning Council had agreed on to expand capacity and address unmet need, are unlikely to get additional city resources at this time. Instead, we'll be working to ensure that there are no deep cuts to the safety net for people living with HIV. I'm happy to answer any questions, but that's sort of my take on where we are at this point. Thanks.
Great, thank you. And I know that we're gonna have a presentation later on that by Department of Health. Any other public comment before moving on?
I'd like to update. I forgot to put that on the agenda. So if I can just have a couple moments. First announcement is that, as you can see here, and if you've been in a committee, all meetings are now back on and they're all virtual meetings via Zoom. And of course with Zoom, you can video link in. And you can also call in if you don't have a video link. And as I mentioned in my first meeting notice, I'm absolutely happy to help anyone out who's having challenges with Zoom or just wants me to do a tutorial or anything like that, just contact me. The second announcement is that we have been revamped. By we, I mean Melina. Melina has been revamping the website. Amazing work. And that should be ready to go next week. It's on an entirely different platform. And we've taken suggestions from co-chairs and from steering about different things to add, and we're excited about it.
Great.
Thank you, Nina.
Awesome. Great, thank you. All right, so moving on with the agenda, we're totally on topic and on time. So general updates. Let's see, who is here? Can we get a CHEP update, Thomas Noble?
Hey there, folks. Since Shelley and Hannah are going to be representing CHEP in the conversation with regards to ending the epidemic, I'm going to just keep things brief. Just many of the prevention staff have been doing COVID work. And so within that, we kind of are well positioned to engage the community-based organizations currently work with to do HIV, Hep C, and STD prevention work to start incorporating how COVID work kind of folds into that. In my specific role at this moment, we've been working with the people who are the case investigators, reaching out to all the folks who are COVID positive and interviewing them and talking, providing services and seeing how they're doing, getting contact with them in that particular role. I think folks are well aware that at least over 50% of the people who are currently being diagnosed are monolingual Spanish-speaking folks. So we are going to lean heavily on the CBOs that actually have access to those communities. And that is me for now.
Okay.
Now.
Cool. Awesome. Thank you. Someone needs to mute their computer. We're getting feedback. All right, moving on. HHS report, either Kevin Hutchcroft or don't know if Dean's on the line, but Kevin.
It'll be just a moment while I find this document. Sorry for the delay. You can go ahead and start if you want, then we'll find the
document. Okay. I guess I'll do the honors unless Dean wants to hog the spotlight.
Go ahead, Kevin. It's all yours.
Okay. So while Mark is pulling that up, I wanted to make a correction. I note in the report that 3 of the 9 HH staff have been activated to work strictly on COVID-19 activities. And I list those as Beth, Neary, John Ainsley, and Floor. And in fact, it should be Bill Bloom. He's been activated. Floor was on, I guess, an early list, but she was never, in fact, activated. As far as I know, she's still working on ARI stuff. So back to the report. Item 1 is HHS sought to get an early sense of the impact of COVID-19 on the HIV provider community. So we conducted a brief survey of providers, and they indicated a variety of unanticipated expenses, including salaries, including overtime and hazard duty pay, the expenses related to the purchase of PPE or personal protective equipment, cleaning materials and supplies, increased transportation costs to get both staff and clients to appointments or work safely, IT cost of telecommuting, providing clients services via telehealth and Zoom. There were increased food costs, to implement social distancing. Secondly, due to staff and clients being ill, quarantined without access to safe transportation, and probably a number of other reasons, we know that some providers may not reach units of service or unduplicated clients accounts during this emergency period. So HHS suspended its policy of holding up payments with these providers, but instead will work with them to resolve issues while payments are issued without delay. Third, HHS has widely distributed a great many communications to providers and the wider community. These include links to important COVID-19 information, information to the shelter-in-place orders, a policy and update on continuity of payment for nonprofit suppliers, resources on behavioral health, including emergency psychiatric services, domestic violence, crisis, Department of Disability and Aging Services on expanded home care options, information about the capacity of additional clients to receive housing or rental subsidies, the Office of Economic and Workforce Development webinar for businesses and CBOs on responding to COVID-19. The California Office of AIDS issued a document on COVID-19 information for people living with HIV. We sent out a list of ADAP network pharmacies that have mail order or delivery services. We gave notice of a webinar for healthcare and homeless council working with homeless clients during the epidemic. And we continue to respond to a great many questions from service provider network. Should note that in March, some $236,000 in unexpended general funds were shifted to emergency financial assistance. That is a significant increase to EFA for just a 3-month period. Also in March, $68,000 was directed from one-time Part B funding to food and meal delivery. This is to help meet the initial increase in numbers of clients that need home-delivered meals and groceries. In steering, we discussed the $488,000 in CARES Act funding. That represents about 3% of our annual Part A funding. Now, that is allocated among the 3 counties in the EMA, about 85% to San Francisco, 11% to San Mateo, and a little over 4% to Marin. San Francisco allocated about 48% of its $413,000 share to meet unanticipated COVID expenses. For Ryan White Parts B and C, an additional $74,000 in CARES Act funding, so a total, I guess, of about $448,000, is available to meet the needs of HIV providers. So all community-based organizations received the full amount of the budget survey list of their COVID-related additional expenses. There was not, however, enough funding to meet the additional expenses of DPH and UCSF funded programs. The remaining portion of San Francisco's share of CARES Part A funding will be used to address five other priority needs as follows: $75,000 for emergency housing, $3,000 for planning council support for IT expenses that will allow a full participation of virtual meetings, $50,000 for prepared meals and groceries, $51,000 emergency financial assistance, $36,000 to meet increased needs of grocery and fast food and transportation vouchers. And item eight, I guess we're on, Bill Hirsch said in his great remarks that we have been given notice of the full Part A award, and the total reduction is, I think, about $367,000. The Part A award is, of course, divided among the three counties in the EMA based on HIV case data. San Francisco client numbers increased in that mix. San Francisco's client numbers decreased, and while San Mateo's grew. So while very likely the city and county will not be able, as Bill said, to backfill those reductions, we will be making adjustments across multiple funding sources, including using new in the epidemic funding for some programs to avoid making any reductions to programs currently funded by HHS. So the priority has been to preserve the Part A funded system of care. Item nine, also as Bill said, the San Francisco general fund budget is estimated to be about $1.7 billion over the next two fiscal years. That's obviously a substantial impact, and we hope to be able to present more detail next month. Finally, there have been no quality management trainings to report. Those have been placed on hold. We continue to explore online options for these trainings. We'd be happy to try to respond to any questions.
All right. Before we get to questions, I know Dean wanted to chime in a little bit. So Dean, please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Thank you, Kevin. Just to clarify, and based on what Bill Hirsch said, what we're doing, it didn't really make sense to us to make a reduction to Part A funded programs or to our system of care in general to offset this grant reduction when all of our programs and services are working very well toward the goals of the ending the HIV epidemic of the federal funding and also our local getting to zero funding as well. So what we were doing is we've identified a couple programs that were Ryan White Part A funded that are striving to serve some of the target populations that we had identified in our grant application and are reaching toward those goals identified in the Ryan White ETHE grant funding, increasing viral suppression and addressing health disparities among highly impacted communities. So we're shifting two of those programs over to ETHE funding, which will still continue the goals of what we were reaching toward without having to apply a reduction to the current constellation of services. It just seemed like the best way to address that overall. And if you have any questions, let us know.
So first question is from Lee Jewell. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the report, Dean and Kevin. I've got a question about HIV reductions. Are we seeing statistics? Of course, is testing still happening? I can't imagine there's people still coming into clinics. What are we seeing in terms of numbers and trends and what the impact might be?
I'll let Thomas answer the question about testing. If he's still there, Thomas, are you available?
I am. I'm just going through the awkwardness of tying a mask and try to unmute. So testing is happening on a pretty limited basis, just due to the fact that we wanted to kind of acknowledge that we didn't want. Wow, that's funny. My cords are coming out of my nose. We didn't want people coming out of their sheltering in place to actually access services unless it was absolutely necessary. So most CBOs are actually halted services or very limited with regards to at needs based kind of testing. If somebody reached out and had a very specific circumstance in which they wanted to get services. And I've actually been working a lot with the City Clinic folks, and they have basically said that they are seeing about a third of the people that they were seeing prior to the COVID. So City Clinic is still open and still operating, and people can access services there. There's just not a lot of folks coming through at the moment. And from a epidemiological standpoint, everyone's really quite curious what this will do to the efforts with regards to how much disease there will be, how STD rates, Hep C, and HIV will actually be impacted by what we're going through at the moment. So more to be revealed, and as shelter in place kind of comes off, will there be a massive increase or will there be a large decrease? And should we lean into that decrease to actually try to eradicate stuff? You know, so we're having those kind of larger level macro conversations at the moment, trying to look towards the future. So I don't know if I answered the question there or if I got it, but I hope so.
All right. Thank you.
Before we continue, I should note for the recording and for the minutes that we've had some people join us, Cicely Emerson, Antoine Matthews, Jesse Murphy, Billy Cooper have all joined the meeting, as well as Hannah Heward.
Great. Fantastic. Next slide, there's a question from Ken Pierce.
So I have a two-pronged question. One is, and it's more about the fiscal realities. So do we expect, because of all the extended budget cycles, that we will continue to pay, continue to fund those organizations based on what the current funding level is, and then just make up the difference in a kind of a, as we have in the past, once we have more full information?
Sorry, Ken, I'm not sure I'm understanding your question, but if you mean in regard to the HHS funded programs that are continuing to serve clients, but perhaps at a lesser level than they have in the past, you know, all of our
I'm more talking about our budget cycles. Isn't it July 1st, and yet everything is being kind of extended, and so we won't have full information. So are we continuing to fund folks based on what they were, as we have done in the past, and then come later, it's going to be consolidated? I guess I'm trying to get a sense of what we're saying, because I also get a sense that we're also going to have problems with how much the city can backfill from as it has in the past, so that if we consolidate and continue to pay as we have, and then wait 3 months or so, and then find that we're not going to have the backfills, we're going to have the last 3 months the rest of the 9 months are going to be really making up the difference. Does that make sense?
It does. Thank you. Thank you for clarifying that question. So we will continue to fund everything at the levels that we have been until we get other news or direction. With the adjustment we're making from the moving those two programs from Ryan White Part A to ETHE funding, we are fine for the rest of the year, and we will be fine for the general fund if we get the same general fund that is in our base budget. And if we need to make reductions, we'll see what that looks like and come back and talk to you all. We have not heard anything. It's so early, and they're still waiting to see what the full impact looks like. You know, we'll bring more information at every meeting as we know more fully what the budget looks like, but we just don't have any news at this point. Honestly, we should start off with a bit of credit because we've already absorbed a reduction that the city has not had to help out with as they have in past years and as the commitment has been in the past. So hopefully, there won't be any further deep impact to our budget, but I just don't know until we know more detail.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
All right. Moving on, if any council members on the phone would like to give a comment or a question, you can contribute now, and if not, we'll just move on. Great. All right. So next up, we still have reports from Getting to Zero and CPG and CARE, and for the purposes of time, I don't know what you guys want to do. So Paul Harkin for Getting to Zero.
So to the best of my knowledge, there hasn't been any Getting to Zero activities due to the fact that almost everybody who's involved with Getting to Zero has been activated for COVID. But if there's anybody else here who has had some Getting to Zero activity, could they please share? Because I have not, and it may be due to the fact that since I left Glide and started working as the harm reduction director at Health Right 360, that may not have been forwarded any Getting to Zero information. So I can't say for sure. Anybody confirm that Getting to Zero has had no activity, which is my belief? Bill?
Yeah, I think you're getting approval for that. All right, cool. Thanks, Paul. And if not, we can catch up next month. Okay. So let's go to CPG with Ken. And you also have an agenda item later on in the agenda. So if you want to skip, you can skip that as well.
Okay. Basically, I think most people know, but I resigned from the CPG in the first part of the year. So I can't really give you an update on where they are at this point. I do know that they did a recruitment for at-large members. I was a little bit a part of that before I left, and they had 50 folks for their at-large, and two came from our jurisdiction, and I'll let them introduce themselves. But the major thing I need to push forward is a replacement for myself, and I have talked to different folks, and including David and Thomas and Kevin, and I will be nominating Thomas and David as co-representatives for our council to the CPG. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ken. Next up, CARE is Lee Jewell.
So not a lot to report back. Appropriators have been really busy with the stimulus bills. You may know that the House last week passed their fourth stimulus bill. It's uncertain what's going to happen because the Senate under McConnell has been reluctant to take it up. We do know that the appropriators have been working remotely, but it's been very slow. There's a good chance that a lot of this will be folded into a continuing resolution. I'll know more at the next CARE board call, which will happen at the beginning of the month. The CARE Coalition meeting that was scheduled for DC in June is now going to be a virtual conference, which I'll be attending remotely. And that's it for CARE.
Great. Awesome. Thank you. All right. Next up is the State Office of AIDS update. Do we have a representative for that?
We do.
Hi, everyone. Can you hear me?
Just a moment while I pull this up for us. We hear you.
Okay, perfect. Hi, everyone. This is Alexandria Andrews from the State Office of AIDS. And for the sake of time, I'll just go over some high-level updates since our monthly newsletter was sent out to the group. Unfortunately, our ADAP representative isn't able to be on the call today, so I will be going through some of the ADAP updates. Lost my screen here. Sorry, I just lost my screen. Just a moment. Okay. Wait, this is it. Oh, I'm sorry. I just had all my Zoom information right here. No, I don't see it. Sorry, can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, sorry. It just, I'm working through a virtual desktop, so sometimes it boots me off. So, sorry about that.
Do you want me to go briefly what's in the OA voice?
I have updates, but the Zoom keeps booting me off of my virtual desktop. Let me try something. Okay, I can briefly go through. I'm sorry, I had updates. It's not letting me see any of my documents. I'll just open it up for questions. Is that okay? Because it's not letting me see anything on my screen.
Sure. So any questions?
Okay. I'm just making sure you all can still hear me because I can't see anything.
It's fine. We can just move on.
It's fine. We can just move on if need be.
Are there any questions on any of the like ADAP information or anything from the different strategies?
All right.
Well.
Oh wait, John has a question. Oh wait. So we can type questions towards the end, John. This is mostly just for council members, and so we'll do public comment in a minute. Public comment is mostly just a statement, so we don't do questions. If you want, you can check in with the presenter at the end of the meeting. But it's mostly just input into the meeting, but not questions, because we don't do questions and answers for public comment. All right, great. So moving on, so committee updates. So really briefly, I'll start. Council Affairs, we met on Tuesday, pretty quick meeting, an hour. We approved the presentations for today. Also, we had to really revise the planning calendar for the next couple of months. And so we'll finalize a little bit more of that. Next month, Mark will put it out probably. But for sure, we're looking at seeing what we're gonna be doing for June. June was supposed to be the AIDS 2020. We're supposed to have like trans community members do panels, but of course we're not doing that. So we'll update you all about what's gonna go on for June. All right, next committee update. Community engagement, co-chair.
I can speak really quickly. It was also a super brief meeting for us. I think our main questions are how to continue needs assessment in some capacity moving forward. I don't know that we have a complete answer yet, but that was the bulk of our discussion. And I think Stephen is giving us a pretty good overview of HCAP today. So that was the other piece.
Awesome. And what else? Who else do we need?
Membership.
Membership co-chair.
Ed.
We had a relatively brief meeting. We reviewed the renewal applications that. We have one prospective member that will be interviewed at our next meeting. We'll do it via Zoom. We are in the process of still looking and considering applicants that that we think would be good members for the council, so we are still doing outreach in that form. And I believe there was one member that will turn. And hey, Ed, I'm just going to leave it at that. Mark, you may want to speak to that.
I'm sorry, Ed, you were in and out during the entire update, so I'm not sure how much anyone got of that. I'll just do a quick breakdown if people can hear me okay. We did the first group of renewals. They're not on the agenda today, and they will be on next month, along with a large number of other renewals. Of course, everyone was approved for renewal. We have one member who is no longer on the council, Wayne Rafis. And as I did hear from Ed, we will be interviewing a candidate next month. We also looked at three documents that will hopefully go out with each meeting notice that could be helpful to council members. There are a list of acronyms, definitions, as well as the rules of respectful engagement. We also went over the meeting attendance requirements, and we do have a lack, not a lack, we do need more HIV positive consumers on the council. So if any council members knows of any individual who fits that description, who would be a good
issue for them. This is such a fucking
mess. And it looks like Allie has something else to add as well.
Yeah, I had intended to say this during announcements. I just wanted to use this time as a reminder for any folks who were on the council during the time of the merge. We have the sort of mass renewal season approaching. So all of you June renewals, please submit those to us because we'll have a lot to review at our next membership meeting.
Cool, awesome. Thank you, Allie. Thank you, Mark, and thank you, Ed. Great, moving on. So next we have the California Planning Group election. So as Ken had mentioned, he's stepping down and he's putting up for nominating Thomas and who else was it?
You, I think it was, David.
No, I'm not me.
Yeah, I think Ken misspoke. Ken, you're on mute.
Kevin, took over Ken.
Kevin.
It was okay, Kevin so and Thomas who are our government co-chairs who are appropriate in that role to serve jointly.
Is there a second for the nominations of Thomas Noble and Kevin Hutchcroft to be the California Planning Group reps?
I second it. Lee Jewell.
Lee Jewell is seconded. Thomas, do you accept the nomination?
I do.
Kevin, do you accept the nomination?
Yes.
All right, we can go to a vote. Any opposed to the motion to approve both of these individuals to be reps for CPG? Hearing none, congratulations. Thank you for your work, Ken.
Thank you. Great, awesome. All right, next we have the HIV Consumer Advocacy Project Annual Report by Stephen Spano. So before we get started, I think as you know, as you all know, HCAP works tirelessly with our people living with HIV. But before we get started, I think there was something that Bill wanted to contribute as well, right?
Yeah, so I will be very brief. I am very happy to have Stephen Spano give a report on the last year of the HIV Consumer Advocacy Project. Stephen just celebrated his first year anniversary with ALRP. I, of course, thought he had only been with ALRP for a few months now, but another year has passed. I have been incredibly impressed with both the passion and the compassion that Stephen brings to this work, and I'm really proud of what he's been able to do for consumers of services in this past year, and I look forward to his presentation. I'm here as needed to help answer questions. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much. We'll take it away, Stephen.
Sure. So this isn't my presentation, whoever's screen sharing, but I can get started.
Yeah, Mark, I think this is the wrong presentation.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Okay.
Please be worried with me. In just a moment.
That's okay.
Just a moment.
Thanks, Ben. So
Why don't you get started with a little bit of background about HCAP, Stephen?
Yeah, well, actually, I wanted to start by just thanking everybody for being so, I don't know, committed. You know, one of the reasons that I really like working for ALRP is because of the team atmosphere, and it's really, it's unique for me in my life to see people rally around a cause, and so I just find that really refreshing, and especially in the state of the society right now, I just really appreciate being, around you all. So with that, I guess I'll start by telling you a little bit about the program. I do have a couple of goals for today. First, I want to tell you about the program. I have an annual report to provide you. I'll give you all the numbers. And then I wanted to talk a little bit about the challenges that I'm seeing consumers face and talk about how we have been able to resolve them in the future. You can move to the next slides, two down. The HIV Consumer Advocacy Project, I affectionately call HCAP. Basically, it's here to provide services to consumers of Ryan White Care funded programs, as well as programs that are funded by the San Francisco of the Department of Public Health, HIV Health Services. It is unique, as far as I know, there's not another attorney in the country that does what I do, because this is the only EMA to have authorized it. Am I supposed to be controlling the slides, or?
I am. Hey, Mark, so can we be on slide three?
Sorry, just the fourth down, I'm sorry. To qualifying for HCAP services is where I'm talking. In order to qualify for the services, one has to be a person living with HIV or AIDS. I'm still not seeing any change to the report, if anybody else is.
Is anyone seeing the share here?
We can, but you're on the first slide. I think he wants to be on the fourth.
Oh, I'm moving along. Okay, so sorry, let me try that again.
That's okay.
Technology, isn't it great?
Well, I mean, I can present. I just want everybody else to be able to see it.
Give me just a moment, I just need to figure this out.
And for some folks, you can pull it up on your email and just follow along if you have the access to do that.
Yeah, I can also talk. I don't typically use slides anyway, so it's relatively new for me. The qualifications to get HCAP services are, you have to be a person living with HIV, you have to be trying to access a Ryan White Care provided, or a Ryan White Care funded program, or a San Francisco Department of Public Health funded program, and you have to be residing in San Francisco, San Mateo, or Marin. The goals of the program are to keep clients connected to services. So as you can imagine, there's not a whole lot of organizations. More for consumers who might not be familiar with the program, but you can imagine it's not a very viable dispute resolution solution to sue back and forth of a whole bunch of companies for whom there's nobody waiting behind to provide. So we're here to resolve disputes informally, so that if you're having a challenge accessing a service, or if you have a problem with the service that you receive from a service provider, you have somewhere to go to and some recourse. In addition to providing those types of services to consumers, like advocacy and mediation, alternative dispute resolution, and also referrals, which we've seen a massive upswing in referrals at HCAP this year, I can also provide services to service providers. So, for example, I can provide technical assistance for those organizations that don't have a confidentiality policy or a grievance policy that's put in place. I can also receive direct referrals from those organizations. So I'm happy to always come and talk with you or your organization or your frontline staff about what it is that I do and how I might be helpful. And I would love to engage more with a lot of the service providers in the system of care to see how I can, talk about best practices for those things, because the documents themselves are kind of useless if they're not actually acted on, just like any legal document. So any issues that are affecting a consumer's ability to access services or their quality of life is something that I can assist with. You can go to the next slide.
So are the slides changing? Are you now, can everyone now see how to contact HCAP?
So I went back to, no.
Darn it, okay.
But that's okay. So my contact information is readily available. I'm happy to provide that to anyone during the answer question and answer period. But let me tell you just a little bit about the consumers that I've served. Well, I'll tell you a little bit about, right now I'll move on to the annual report because I do have some numbers to talk to you about. It's a little bit more challenging, and I imagine if you're anything like me, your eyes will glaze over if I just throw numbers at you without anything to look at. So I'll just tell you a little bit, you know, I'll tell you quickly, I'll try to make it as painless as possible. We served 90 unduplicated clients with a total of 123 HCAP matters from the 2019 to 20 contract year. There's no significant difference between now and previous years. There was a slight dip back in 2016 to 2017, but other than that, we've pretty much hovered around 86 to 91 clients, and that's exactly where we're at this year. We're in 90 unduplicated clients. So there are some demographics that I can talk to you about. Again, no statistical significant difference that I can tell from having reviewed the epidemiology reports. I didn't actually quote any of it in this presentation, but I can tell you that I did take a look at them. There's really no deviation from any of the epidemiology reports that I saw from 2018 to 2019. We've got 61 of the clients which are over 50, are over the age of 50. 78 of the 90 are identifying as male, 9 female, and 2 transgender. Both the transgender clients were transgender female identifying. I had 49 clients that identified as white and 16 as Latinx. And 15 African-American black. Again, no significant statistical deviation from what I saw in the epidemiology report. 64% of clients identified as gay as lesbian, 16 heterosexual, 7 bisexual, and a large majority, over 72%, over 72 clients had an income under $15,000, making them extremely low income. I had, you know, the service provider, the service categories that I used mirror the service categories that are authorized and prioritized by the Planning Council. I had the top 4 services this year were emergency financial assistance, of which there were 23 of the 123 cases, primary medical, housing, and then psychosocial support. And the top 4 issues were information and referrals. There was a significant increase in information and referrals this year from previous years. And that's been a trend that we've seen over the last 3 or 4 years. There have been 17 access issues, 16 miscommunication issues, and termination, 13 terminations from service providers. I just want to check in because I can't see anything. Is everybody still with me? For the most part, there's no technical issues or anything.
Can see anything?
I will assume that's true.
Hey Stephen, if we're following along at home, what slide should we be looking at?
So right now I'm kind of going to condense it all into, there's a slide number 12 that says, what does this all mean? And that's the question of the day. So based on HCAP cases, what I'm seeing is housing related emergency financial assistance was the highest, was the greatest need in the EMA.
And that
Rose
can
come into the building and bring the dog.
Oh yeah.
I think the dog is less trouble than a visitor.
Sorry. So the majority of consumers are 51 or older, which is consistent with the patterns that we've seen from other presentations by the committee. And the consumers are extremely low income. There was a shift in service categories from the previous years. I think previously housing was the greatest need. Interesting. I'm reluctant to draw any correlations because the numbers are so small. But it is interesting to me that the amount of emergency financial assistance cases seemed to correlate with the decrease in the number of housing cases. That could be a reality, or it could also be a reporting thing, and how my predecessor was reporting. Also finding that the consumers are increasingly needing referrals to service providers, and that has been consistent moving up. And I think it's a really important role that HCAP plays, and I'll talk a little bit more about that sooner. The last trend that I'm seeing is a shift towards the least adversarial methods of conflict resolutions. One of the things that I see, if you read the full report, you'll see that there was a decrease in the overall number of grievances. And I see that as a good thing because, filing a grievance, obviously it's not the same as filing a lawsuit, but once you create an adversarial, at least what I find in dealing with people and consumers and service providers, once you create an adversarial process, you automatically kind of deteriorate the level of control that each party has. So I'll talk to you a little bit about the consumer challenges that we're having now. And obviously the first, the service category might differ, or how I've described the service category might differ. The challenges remain the same. Housing is a human right. That's what we've been saying, and it's what I've been seeing lots of protests over. And I agree. It has to be a mantra that's internalized, though. What that really needs to mean to any service provider that's receiving these services, that's serving this population, is the second that they walk in the door, if they're experiencing a housing issue, they're experiencing a violation of a human right, of a basic right. And that's going to mean that that's going to carry alongside of it a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety, and a lot of anger. And I think people should be angry, and we should all be angry about how they've been treated. But we also have to understand that that's part of their baseline when they walk in the door. So my connection to service providers can help to inform and resolve the issues to try and make sure that everybody understands where everybody's coming from. And I've seen some really amazing work done in the rooms at the tables that I've sat at, some resulting in a change to policy and some resulting in, sustaining, an agency decision, but in both instances, seeing some real growth through the conflict. Mental health and substance use disorders, which is the next slide. Mental health and substance use disorders account for a large number of cases that HCAP sees. A lot of the clients have coexisting mental health and substance use disorders. Behavioral health issues that stem from those things can create barriers to services. And obviously the competing need there is that service providers need to protect their clients. They need to maintain some order in their building, and they need to protect, obviously their safety concerns. But what I've found in several instances is we run into situations where clients' disabilities are so severe that there really is nowhere to send them. And we don't have a safety net for clients like this. I've found myself telling people to go to psych emergency as though that's going to solve the problem. But, I also have had clients talk to me about the traumatic experience that they've had at PES. Jail is not a better option for people. And I've had clients fleeing the EMA as well when they find that they can't receive the services here, but I don't know where they're fleeing to because there's certainly no EMA that is better situated to assist them than we are. In HCAP, what I try to do is garnish the support of the service providers who have been who have encountered some of the challenges, the behavioral challenges that our most vulnerable clients have sought. Aging is obviously another major issue, and one of the things that means to me, one of the things, ways that it presents myself, presents to my office, and also the way that I try to present it to the service providers, is that there is an immense level of trauma that clients who are long-term survivors have experienced, and they're facing ongoing issues with isolation. I hear what other service providers have echoed, what other presenters have echoed, that is that there's been a lack of empathy by this by the younger community members and service providers. And one of the antidotes to that, I believe, is trauma-informed care. And I've seen some amazing efforts on the part of both service providers and the Department of Public Health to educate about trauma-informed care, and the frontline staff just needs to be right there alongside them. So through implementing this and talking about it with service providers, we have had some successes. Here's some promising service trends that I've seen are, and this is moving down in the presentation as well, if you're following along.
What page of slide should be on right now?
Slide 18, if you're following me. I'm sorry, I can be better about talking about that too. There was an increase in mediation and representation in meetings. Those can happen telephonically and face-to-face. And I think the increase in that number has really led to a lot of really positive resolutions. For me, when my clients show up and they're talking to me about a stressful situation that they've encountered, I don't ever really see engaging in a conflict as a way to relieve that tension, and I try to talk to them about real life, what that means. You know, I am HIV positive. I am a consumer of Ryan White services in the city. I have been, I was also a practicing lawyer, and I can tell you that as a practicing attorney, I had the benefit of being connected to healthcare, and I would get tested every 3 months to see my T cell count and my viral load. And I can tell you, I would see a curve with my T cell count dropping to the floor every time that I was in the middle of litigation. And I wasn't even the one that was having housing challenges. It wasn't even my housing that was at stake. So just merely the virtue of being engaged in that type of conflict with the stakes being so high is stressful enough to deteriorate your health, to have the deleterious effect on your health. And that's my main goal when I talk with a client that's in front of me, because oftentimes there's not a legal solution. Well, there is sometimes if you're willing to go the distance, but most of the time, the best way to solve the problem is to talk about it. And that's what I'm here to do. So this decrease in filing grievances is kind of a result of that, because I've been able to informally resolve a lot of disputes simply by having a conversation and checking in and say, hey, do you know where this person is coming from? And hey, can you understand why the service provider might have acted this way, you know, not knowing these facts or not knowing this about you? And we've had great results that way. And I think people tend to gravitate towards the path of least resistance. So it's just a matter of guiding them there. I am evaluated in the program. There's satisfaction surveys sent out by AORP. It's been a struggle to get responses from my clients. A lot of them suffer, like I said, from multiple diagnoses, and also a lot of them don't have addresses that are reliable. But I did receive 100% positive feedback from 4% of the people who received surveys. I also am luckily my skills are quantified by a couple of other things. I do outreaches, and during those outreaches, people get to grade me. And 93% of both consumers and providers who completed the surveys at the ends of those presentations thought it was overall 4 or 5 out of 5. This is a great story, this success story, which is on slide 20, will be the last slide besides the final one with my contact information. But this, I think, this illustrates an issue where HCAP's strengths are really highlighted. I had a consumer with cognitive challenges needed to get a state ID, and anybody who's a service provider knows that you have to have an ID in order to receive services. you have to show residency requirements, income requirements, and these are documents that you need. So if you don't have an ID, you really can't get any of that stuff, and that's a barrier to success or to access. So we did work through. It was a tricky situation. The cognitive disabilities that this client faced forced them resulted in them going and filing the wrong documents, and the DMV found it to be fraud. So this is a person who had multiple name changes and was and wanted to change other things about their birth certificate, and ran into barriers because the DMV saw that they had been lying to them or thought that they had been lying to them. So it required some intervention in order to clarify that. And only once we clarified that were we able to get them connected, recertify them for their housing subsidy, and make sure that everything was clean and in order so that there weren't going to be any disruptions in service. But more than that, being able to connect them to those services and help them recertify, this is a client who really doesn't have a whole lot of people to rely on. And yet I see her every couple of weeks. And they'll show up to just hand me some documents, and sometimes it's relevant and sometimes it's not, but they'll tell me exactly what's going on in their life and where they've encountered some challenges. And if it's a legal issue, I can refer it to AORP. If it's not a legal issue, I can sit there and listen and check in and see if you've talked with your social worker or whoever it is that I've asked. Or whoever it is that I think is appropriate, and I think that connection to the system of care, to the continuum of care, is what HCAP is really strong in. So that's pretty much the presentation. That's the program, and I'm happy to answer questions.
All right. So first, we have Jackson had something to contribute.
Hey, I know I said this in the in our committee meeting, but I just want to repeat again. This was such an excellent presentation. So much heart, and really something to be so proud of. The work that you're doing, but also like the fact that this is a service.
Jackson, you cut out.
I think you're muted all of a sudden.
Right when it's starting to get good.
Jackson. Well, I don't know what happened.
Imagine a surplus of compliments. He loved his presentation.
Thank you.
All right. Sorry, we'll have to go around back to Jackson again later. Any other questions or comments, or anybody calling in on the phone lines? I feel like a radio announcer.
So I have a question. This is Ken Pierce.
Yes.
Stephen, I'm just wondering how, with the new kind of communication barriers we're finding, how you would be working to make sure the clients have access to you. It just seems like it's an added problem.
Yeah, I mean, and I imagine it's not so different than what everybody experiences. And it is, it's an added problem. It's a new challenge that I think a lot of service providers are going to have to step up to the plate for. We're used to having clients drop in the office. We're used to having clients, show up with appointments and monitoring that and handling that and with that workflow. I will say, I'm already seeing some challenges show up that I think can be probably preempted by a lot of service providers. I had a client call who, had a challenge with the service provider and wanted to file a grievance. And they asked if they want, they asked for the grievance, they asked for the grievance form, and the response was to say, yeah, it's at the office, come pick it up. And, that obviously creates some barriers. If the only way for a client to file a grievance is to violate the shelter in place order, that can't be a policy that we allow in the system of care. So, but all it took in that instance was pointing it out and saying, hey, I think we really need to rethink how you're distributing these forms. Is there any support I can offer? And, in the current circumstances, I'll step up however I have to. If I have to run down and make a copy and a PDF and send it to somebody, I will. Like, I'll figure out a way to get, to assist a client or a service provider, however I can. But fortunately, the service provider, with just the mention of it, kind of solved the issue. I think we're all just figuring it out. And that's one of the conversations that I've been having both with clients and with service providers, which is some of this is going to be a discussion, right? And that's the thing about grievances. People, I think there's a tendency to, and this is true in the law too, right? Like, people don't, like, nobody likes getting served or sued or anything like that, right? In the law, we don't say suing, a lawsuit is good or bad. We just say a lawsuit is, right? And the same is true with the grievance. The grievance should not necessarily be considered, a ding or a punishment. It's an invitation. It's an invitation to solve something, that may be a legitimate dispute or maybe a legitimate access issue. And this is one. So, by mentioning it, by bringing it up, I think a lot of service providers are going to have to react to that. And then they'll realize, oh, well, this policy doesn't necessarily work because of this footnote that we never thought about. And we'll just have to talk about the footnote and see if, how it can get resolved. And on it, I don't see anybody in our system of care being so unreasonable that they would not, learn from this experience and figure out how to resolve identified access issues.
Stephen, this is Richard Sullivan.
Yep.
And thanks for your presentation. I also live with HIV and have received services and still do. And everything you're talking about, I've been part of, the good ones, the bad ones. And I needed advocacy during those times. And I really appreciate what you're saying. It's absolutely necessary. And I think you mentioned that your position is the only one of its kind doing this. And that speaks volumes. It's unbelievable that that's so. But it's absolutely necessary. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And I just want to respond for a second. So I don't cite me on that because I actually haven't looked. That's just what I've been told by previous HCAP.
It speaks volumes for San Francisco and yourself and the organization you work for.
And that's kind of what I wanted to point at, because I think it is important that the system of care really treasures that and pushes back on it. And I also, Richard, I'll make sure to follow up with you, because if you didn't know that there was an advocate, then I want to know how I could resolve that and see how I can reach out to the communities that you might have been hanging in that didn't know about HCAP, because I find it to be a very effective tool for a lot of consumers.
Great, thank you. And then anybody calling in would like to question? Anybody calling in who has a question or a comment before we move on to public comment?
Let me unmute that person, and let me also add something while I unmute. Besides being an awesome presentation, obviously an awesome program, I think this is a program that the council itself should take a lot of pride in. I'm not sure if newer members know this, but it is actually the former care council that created this program, the first, and I still think it the only one of its kind. So this advocacy program came from the community to help the community. And it's something I think that all council members should be proud of, because it came from people like yourselves, including some people who were still on the council when it was created.
All right, great. So we have Jackson back, who wanted to finish with a question for Stephen.
Sorry, my computer lost its mind. So actually my question was about, you said that one of the biggest upticks you saw was referrals and service. And I think in past presentations, we've gotten something about how many people accessed services that were recurring or who had accessed services before. Do you have any reason to believe, or do you know anything about the folks who were asking for referrals of service? Are they folks who were newly positive or new to San Francisco or new to Ryan White Services? Or do you think that there's other reasons why there was such an uptick in that particular area?
Well, a couple of reasons. First, well, I do my best to make sure that anytime there. So let me just. There were some challenges. Be careful about the trends, and this is notated on the percentage on the presentation. It's a little bit of a challenge because, you know, with 90 unduplicated clients, one more client is more than 1% of, you know, of a deviation. So it can indicate a false trend, so to speak. You know, it could just be one or two clients that makes it look like there's a big difference. I think what your question is, you know, is there, have I seen a lot, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but if I understand correctly, you're wondering about the difference between clients that have been referred to a service for the first time and that the system has not seen or that program has not seen versus clients who were there and either were discharged or were or just did not get connected to care or weren't HIV positive at that time. And I can tell you with near certainty that I did not have any newly diagnosed clients in the EMA. I'm comfortable saying close to that. I did not have any newly diagnosed clients in the EMA this year. The referrals come from different ways, and from oftentimes it's a result of a new referral where a client goes to a service provider and that service provider, they have a challenge. And I have a discussion. I say, look, there's a couple of ways we can go about this, right? One, you know, there's a legal action. It's probably not a good action. And this is these are the reasons and this is the challenge you're going to face doing it. The other thing is we can talk about agreements. The other thing is you can forget it altogether and you can go to a new service provider because guess what? There's another service provider that provides these services or we can try and move you. And we just try to find the path of least resistance for the client. And oftentimes the system of care provides for a lot of those things. So if a client is unhappy, then maybe it's a new referral. I will say this to answer your question more on point. I did not track whether it was a client that had previously been referred to a service provider or not. I often ask clients, have you been to such and such before? Or have you been to this? Did you know that this was available? Did you know you were eligible for this? And the answer can be no, but it's not no. When I go to the service provider, I say, oh, we talked to this client last year. They just didn't engage or, you know, and here, this is actually an opportunity for improvement, I think, for the entire, thing. I can tell you as a consumer why that happens. Why it happens is because you go to a service provider and you ask for a thing, and instead of a thing, the client gives you a whole bunch of referrals to organizations whose phone numbers have changed, or whose doors haven't been open for a month, or somebody that's totally irrelevant, or somebody for whose services you're not eligible, right? You can preempt a lot of those non-referral referrals by being poignant and being exacting about where you place people, but it requires, you know, a knowledge of the service system, which not everybody has, and I'm still learning as well, you know, the referral numbers might change, you know, somehow. I can't foresee how that would happen. And I don't even know if this answers your question because I have zero feedback, but I hope it does.
All right. Awesome. We're almost out of time. So if there's no more comments or questions, especially folks from the phone calling in. All right. Since I'm seeing none. Great. Thank you so much, Steven. You rock.
You all rock.
All right, great. Right. Yes, Mark?
Public comment?
All right. Okay. Moving on to the ending the epidemics, community engagement. So next up we have Hannah and Shelly, who have been working with us closely for a few months now. Want to discuss sort of like what's going on with concurrence as well as next steps. So please take it away.
Great. Hannah, do you want me to dive in or are there updates, kind of overarching updates you wanted to give first?
Sure. Yeah, just real quick. Hi, everybody. Nice to be here. Nice to see you all. So we are going to give you, we're going to have a discussion today about the collaboration we're getting to zero and developing this plan, and Shelley has a presentation on that. I did just want to ask if there is any, if you have any feedback on the documents that were sent out in April. That was the draft plan that we submitted to CDC in December, and then a larger strategies document. If you have feedback via track changes, if you can send them to me by June 1st, me and Shelley, by June 1st, that would be great. And if you have questions about that, we can talk about that too. I just want to make sure that we asked for the feedback at a specific date because my email didn't have a date. And I think that that's the only update I have.
Okay, great. Well, I think I only have a few slides. This is a lot less of a update really or a presentation and more of a discussion we're hoping to have with all of you. But I wanted to sort of set the stage a little bit with a few slides before we dive into discussion. So the first thing is just as Hannah and I were talking about this, we know there are so many puzzle pieces to this ending the epidemics funding and planning, and it can be very confusing. And so I wanted to take yet another attempt at laying out each puzzle piece in the most simple way, and hopefully that will help help make things a little clearer for people. So there are a few animations here. If you want to just go one by one, Mark, as I talk, that would be helpful. Oh, great. Okay, then wait. And so there are, you know, you all are very familiar. We, as much as we're trying to integrate and not be siloed, at least at the federal level and in all sorts of other ways, there are still pretty clear silos or funding streams for HIV work. And of course, while San Francisco is talking about this as ending the epidemics, and we talk about HIV and hepatitis C and STIs in an integrated way, at the federal level, this is ultimately an HIV initiative, and that's particularly what they're concerned with. And so there are prevention dollars. Those come from CDC, and those are PS 20-2010. You may have heard people talk about 20-2010. Hannah has been working incredibly hard to put together an application for San Francisco to get those prevention dollars, which is no small feat. Thank you, Hannah, on behalf of everyone. And that is non-competitive money, meaning they basically said San Francisco will get something in a range of $2.1 million to $2.3 million a year. And it's a five-year funding, and it would start August 1st, would be year one. And so that dollar amount is sort of the year one dollar amount. It'll be somewhere in that range. The application was just submitted, and so we know there will be some money, but we don't know exactly what the dollar amount will be until we hear back on that grant. But that all starts August 1st. So that's like prevention implementation, CDC dollars. And then there's the care side, HRSA. You're all familiar with this. I know that Bill and Dean and others have worked closely with all of you on putting in this application that went in a while ago, which was HRSA 2078 or 078. I'm not even sure how it's pronounced. But that was, again, a five-year, it's again a five-year project. It actually started March 1st. And so they asked for a lot more, but ended up getting awarded $1 million for year one. And that plus there is that hopefully in subsequent years, there'll be an opportunity to get more money. So we know we have that $1 million for HRSA that started March 1st, and then hopefully a little bit more in subsequent years. We also have hopefully a little more than 2 million for prevention each year starting August 1st. And then there's also this HRSA 2091, which is primary care, the Bureau of Primary Health Care. I forget the exact acronym, it's four letters, starts with P. Anyway, it's about primary care. And money went to the Community Clinic Consortium and the Missionary Health Association, or Associates. And that's 2 years with the possibility of extension, and that started April 1st. So those were also awarded, and that was the amount that you see on the screen there. So that's the care side. And then there are research dollars, and those came from NIH. Those are what are called CFAR supplemental awards. So basically, researchers who already had NIH awards could apply for supplemental money of $150,000 per award that was for 1 year that started July 1st of last year. So that is almost done with that year. And three of those were awarded to San Francisco folks. Al Liu, who you all know well, Willie McFarland, who I'm sure you also know well, and Monica Roy, probably the same. So San Francisco has all of this money kind of coming in at different times in different ways for different things, but it's all part of this ending the epidemics umbrella. And then if you click one more, Mark, there's also, there was the promise of SAMHSA dollars, although as, to my knowledge, none of that has actually been RFP'd. There's no money has, no money has flowed yet through SAMHSA, but in theory, SAMHSA is also part of this. And then there's Indian Health Service dollars also. So there's sort of a five pillar ending the epidemics plan. And I don't think any Indian Health Service dollars are really touching San Francisco either. But those pieces are there. So that's the picture of all the implementation funds. Okay, now if you click one more. The other really important piece to understand, and this is what's very confusing for a lot of people, is the planning dollars, right? So everything on the left side of the screen is implementation dollars. That's what's going to actually implement programs, actually do things that will affect people directly. And on the right side, what's called 19-1906 is funds, if you see in the blue text, that's intended for developing county level 5-year plans to end the epidemic. And that covers all the ending the epidemics activities. So the funds come through CDC because the feds had to pick somebody. So it's a CDC grant, but it's not for prevention dollars. That's 2010. It's really coming through CDC, but it's to develop a 5-year plan for San Francisco for how we're going to do everything, including everything on the left of the screen. And that was a $375,000 1-year award. It started October 1st of last year. And that money came through the DPH, but this is how I've been hired, and Facenti Consulting has been working on this. We're working to help write the actual plans as part of this funding. It's also the supplemental community engagement activities. So obviously there's community engagement through all of you, which is very critical and central to things, and through Getting to Zero and through other structures that already existed. But there was also the Holuna Health Community Engagement RFP. And I think I've got that dollar amount right. And that was money that was RFP'd recently. The contracts just came through, and that community engagement is starting. And that's for 5 specific population groups, with the idea being that we're really going to try to drill down and talk to people who haven't ever been included before, haven't been engaged, and ask them for feedback and engage new voices. And so all of that is being funded out of this $375,000. So 19-1906 pays for the development of the 5-year plan. And then everything else in its little siloed funding ways pays for actually implementing what we say we're gonna do in the plan and anything else. So hopefully that just helps clarify a little bit what's what and who I am and why I'm here and what all these different applications are and how they fit together. But I would be happy to pause here and see if anybody has questions about kind of this, like how the puzzle piece works, just to make sure everyone understands before we move forward.
Anybody have any questions, any comments before moving forward? All right, seeing none, okay. Please go ahead.
Okay, great. Okay, so then the real meat of today is we spoke to I guess it was the steering committee a month ago, and basically as part of this big 5-year plan, what we want to do is create kind of what we've called like an HIV chapter of the plan, because we're of course doing HIV, Hep C, and STIs, and so a lot of it is kind of all of those things together. But then, you know, NTEP CSF has its own strategic plan, and that will sort of be like the Hep C specific chapter. And then there's an STI framework that similarly will kind of focus on those things. And we wanted to create an HIV chapter that ultimately synthesized all of the work for getting to zero and the HCPC. So HCPC, of course, having a huge involvement in the integrated plan that you all did that still technically lasts for another year. And then Getting to Zero has their own strategic plan and their own things. And the idea was to really take those pieces and figure out how to create a single document, a single strategy, where those two groups are really working in a united way towards a single San Francisco HIV strategy for ending the HIV epidemic that would essentially become, replace those. You know, it would become the integrated plan in the future. It would become Getting to Zero's strategic planning document. And that it really would require a whole new level of collaboration and connection beyond what has happened before to try to create a single path moving forward that everybody's really bought into. So that was the idea. And it still is sort of the idea, except once COVID-19 hit, we really had to take a step back and say, okay, so all of these plans we had to have all sorts of joint meetings and have everybody be strategic. Instead, for months, you know, these groups, you all went on hiatus, largely, as was a completely reasonable thing to do. But it really meant we had to revisit what was possible. And so a month ago, we talked with the steering committee, I think that's who it was, about kind of what's the best, what can we do? What would be some ideas about how to get HCPC and Getting to Zero collaborating, knowing that this five-year plan has to be done by August because it has to come to you all for a letter of concurrence before we submit it to CDC by the deadline. And so we're talking about only a few months over the summertime. And while most of you probably don't have fabulous vacations still planned for the summer, it's still, this is not a really easy time to do planning. And so what can we try to do? So we sent out this survey, and to be perfectly honest, I didn't send it out. I'm not entirely sure who it went to. Regardless, the idea was to present to you all these ideas that people had put in the survey, and then we'd have a starting place to discuss it. Unfortunately, only two people took the survey. So thank you very much to the two of you who took the survey. I'm going to share what those people said as a starting place. But then the hope is that instead of the survey that we just kind of discuss now and with the group of you see what kind of ideas people have. So yeah, one question is, you know, is the fact that only two people took the survey a sign in itself? I think it's really important that we just be realistic about what's possible, the bandwidth we all have. Some people, you know, aren't working in the same way, are home, feel like they have a lot more time, but I think we're all also carrying a sort of mental and emotional weight now that we're not used to carrying all the time. And that on top of everything, with the logistics and everything else, makes it challenging. And so it's easy to be ambitious and say, well, it would be great if we did this, it would be great if we did that. And there's no reason we shouldn't try to think big. And at the same time, I think it would be good in our discussion today to be truly honest about what we all think we can commit and other people can commit moving forward so that we come up with a realistic plan. And then the next point on here, is the two people who took this are already members of both bodies. So I just think that that's important. They're already both part of HCPC and Getting to Zero. And so that's a different type of person than those of you who are really only involved in one and feel potentially disconnected from the other, which is exactly what we're going to try to alleviate over this time. So, okay, this is what people said. The question, it was like a one question survey. So the question was, what do you think is the best way to develop a cohesive plan for ending HIV in San Francisco while sheltering in place? It was a two question survey. This was the first question. And so the answers were reviewing documents, completing surveys. And then one person suggested that upper echelon members of each group, sort of the leadership in each group, could reach out to the others from the other group and come up with some initial ideas, which of course maybe could feed into the documents or surveys.
And they could also handpick key players from within each body to serve as like an advisory type commission. So sort of a subcommittee, but formed between the two groups, not a subcommittee of each group who then works separately. It would be a united body. And then the idea would be that kind of long range face-to-face meetings would ultimately be the goal, and those could be tentatively planned for when COVID restrictions lift. But that in the meantime, it's kind of initial planning and ideas of what we think it could be, but not like regular meetings and planning in the depth we would have before. And then the second question was, if we weren't sheltering in place and we could have in-person meetings, what would we do? And there was only one of the two people answered, and the answer was merge the two bodies. I mean, honestly, why not? So I think that's where I'll leave it. This is the end of the slides. And for the rest of the time we have available, it would be good to just hear from all of you. What do you think, both, you know, this idea of, does it make sense to try to merge? Do the two groups have distinct roles and need to stay separate? And if they do, then what might that look like? Both in the long term, but certainly in the short term, knowing that we have a short way to go. So let's just open it up and see what people think. I see some coming in the chat, but I'll let you all sort of moderate, I think, the question.
All right. So, yes. So if any of y'all want to answer questions or give some input, you can always raise your hand on the Zoom application, or just type in a message. So here's a message from Ben Kabangang. To suggest, you know, a single work group comprised of both Getting to Zero and HCPC, you know, working together as a like the jurisdictional work group had done previously to put together the plan. And then, you know, there's a comment from Mike Schreiber saying, you know, merging the two groups would be a wise decision at this point.
No, would but not be a wise. Would not be wise.
Right, Mike.
I would not. I would not support the idea of merging Getting to Zero and the Planning Council. I think they're two very different planning bodies. I really like Ben's idea and Shelley's idea from the surveys of having a joint group between the two of them. But I don't think that this is a good time, nor do I think it's advisable at all to think about merging them. And as somebody who's sat on both of them.
Great. Any other input or questions?
There's two raised hands from Jack and TJ.
Jackson, take it away.
Okay, full disclosure, I'm the person who suggested merging them. And it was a little bit flippant, but not entirely. So here's the thing. I feel like we've been having conversations for a long time about an evolution of the council, right? So we've got a few set things that we have to do every single year. One HIV prevent, quote unquote, prevention thing, a small group of HIV care things, and then most of a year full of presentations. And I think that we've had a lot of conversations about, is this council still relevant? Like, is the small amount of work that we do every year, in relationship to like meeting all of year, is it proportional? Is there more that we can do? I feel like we've done a lot in the last couple of years around drug user health. I think I think merging the two councils has brought up a lot of conversations around what is care and what is prevention, and like what is in our wheelhouse and what isn't, and that kind of stuff. And so I think that the idea around merging it is both a little pithy, because I think Getting to Zero is duplicitous as a person who's on Getting to Zero. And also, I think that there's an opportunity around kind of expanding what the council's considers its purview to be towards or including some of the kinds of stuff that Getting to Zero does. So I didn't mean it, I did actually mean it seriously, and I would have a conversation about it, but also I hear that it's outside the box.
Yeah, TJ and then Richard Sullivan.
So I agree with Mike Shriver, in no way should we merge. There's different funding streams, even though some of our work overlaps. When you go to the meetings, they're completely different, having attended our meetings and their meetings at different times of the year. And also, I don't understand why there is a problem with getting the two leaderships together. Most of those people that are over there were at least at one point part of the Ryan White Cure Council or part of prevention. And I just don't understand why there is this roadblock. So that's what I have to say.
Great. All right. Next up is Richard.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you, Shelley. I'm the other one that answered the survey, and I didn't mention merger, but you know, I'm new to this, but from what I can see, just standing back, everyone knows each other. I mean, I know they each have to stay in lanes, but everyone seems to know each other and function well together and know what the other body is basically up to. And that's why I kind of mentioned my own way that, you know, these upper echelon folks on both teams, I don't know who's who, but, you know, the big hitters on each side can get together, so to speak, and start to mull things over, maybe a little casually at first. I know things have to be official, but, you know, kind of off the record stuff. Hey, what's going on with this? And, until it gets formed and until they can come together. Like I said, like TJ was just saying, from my opinion, everyone seems to know each other already. There's a common cause here, basically, the parameters of this. And just some behind-the-scenes communication between the big guns on each side and comparing notes, so to speak. And I think that could be a good thing. Thank you.
All right. Anybody else have any input or questions? And I think just circling back to really what the presentation is about today is really talking about what the feasibility of next steps, specifically around shelter in place, but then also, you know, working with the structure that we have now and what direction we can expand in or, you know, tighten up. All right. There comment from Paul saying, you know, excellent accomplishments on both parts, but really getting to zero doesn't have the same vision as HPPC. So, you know, really looking about maybe partnering up and not merging.
It's like Jeff.
Just elaborate on that. So, yeah, I mean, what's been interesting about getting to zero is there's a lot of medical folks that are very powerful and influential involved, and there's no question that they were able to move things much more quickly than certainly the recent council has been able to move things. Like when they got HIV navigators, they got funding, they got people hired, they expanded the navigation network, and it happened much more quickly than most things that I've seen the council do recently. So there's definitely a potency and a dynamism there that I wouldn't want to fuck with or mess with. And, you know, merging could do that versus we can partner. We do have somewhat, you know, we get very similar tracks, but I think there's just a more provider, medical provider emphasis that getting to zero has. And there's just some more expertise there that is valuable to the community. Their meetings are very dynamic. You know, their agenda always has this kind of, you know, next steps to making it so. And I would not like to mess with that. I'd like the council to be as good at executing plans and bringing them to fruition as getting to zero is. And I see it as a strong partnership with cross-fertilization. And I think merging might dilute some of what's good about both parties. It's just my theory.
Thanks, Paul. Next, I have a question or comment from Jackson and then Ken Pierce. So, Jackson?
Merging is definitely not the hill that I'm going to die on, but I don't think that diverging styles of meetings or one being dynamic is enough of a reason to say that we could not consider this. I think there are all kinds of ways that we could work closer together, but I think we do a lot of them already. We have people who are on both councils. We have, I think, conversations between our leadership and their leadership. I think that we've done a lot of what we can do as two separate bodies. And I think that, you know, everybody's got their strengths, right? And everybody has their weaknesses. And I feel like there are opportunities here that could bolster the work that that HCPC has been doing over the years to sort of bring it into a new kind of dynamic, action-oriented era. And I think that there is some grounding and some legitimacy that HCPC brings that could also support the work of getting to zero. So I don't think that they would necessarily tear each other down. I will not leave this council over this conversation. If nobody here wants to do it, well then there you go, girl. But I'm just gonna say I put it out there.
Great, thanks, Jackson. Next, I have Ken Pierce.
So I'm a little confused because it seems like Ben suggested a merged work group, which then jumped into the council merging. So, and quite frankly, I'm not sure I like the idea of it being the focus of this presentation to tell the council it should merge. I'm just a little bit taken aback at the direction we're going with all this and would like us to make sure everybody's on the first base, but I definitely do not agree at this point we should be talking about merging the full council. This is kind of crazy. Who's talking about what? Who's supporting what is not clear.
Thanks, Ken. And then Ben, you messaged something on the chat box. Could you share that with the rest of the group?
Sure. Ken just nailed it too. I think we had a very simple ask for this agenda item, and there is a simple solution that I would love for us to discuss. As far as the larger discussion regarding a merger, I think it's a great topic to discuss. Unsure if this specific agenda item is the right place to discuss it.
Great. And then just to summarize, I guess, for Hannah and Shelley, what do you feel we should come out of this meeting right now? Like what would be the most beneficial sort of feedback you need from us just for this meeting before we move on to the next steps?
Actually, before they jump in, I've had Mike communicating that he's been wanting to speak for a bit.
Oh, okay, Mike, sorry, Mike Schreiber, please go ahead.
Unmute him. Maybe it's on our end.
Am I unmuted?
Yep, you're unmuted.
Yes, you are.
Ben, I just want to second what Ben said. That was what I wanted to bring up. I don't want us to take the immediacy of the need for the application to put us in a position where we are not ready to have a longer term discussion about merger, because it sounded like a lot of the stuff that we were talking about isn't really germane to the ask that we have right now in front of us from Hannah and from Shelley. So I really supported Ben's proposal.
Great. So Hannah, Shelley?
So I'll say quickly and then sort of pass it off to Hannah. I think to be clear, the presentation was just sharing back the brainstorm of ideas. And I think mostly what we wanted out of this was a brainstorm of potential paths for the future, not deciding any paths for the future, but just thinking bigger picture, if the goal is to figure out how to, there's sort of two pieces, right? There's how do we write the application? It's not an application. How do we write? So this is actually the important point. It's not an application. It's a plan for the path for the next 5 years, what San Francisco should be doing with HIV. And so if it was just an application, we could say, well, what do we need to do to get some answers, to fill something in, to submit? But because the point of it is to write something that's our sort of roadmap, well, I shouldn't use that word. It's our path for ending the HIV epidemic in San Francisco in the next 5 years. The idea was to spend these last many months having these in-depth conversations that we can't have in 20 minutes during this HCPC call on Zoom, but to do that in a whole series of ways in depth. And so I think the ask for today is, what can we actually do instead of that, that will still allow us to feel like we can put together some sort of plan for the next 5 years of working with HIV in San Francisco? And it seems to me that a very short-term specific thing that that was suggested and that I think is seems to have pretty good support is to talk also with Getting to Zero about the idea of having a smaller subset of both kind of merged into one smaller group that can deal with these issues more frequently between now and when the plan has to be written and submitted. And we actually have a meeting coming up with Getting to Zero in June. And so we can, we will bring this conversation to them and sort of the suggestion to do this. And that's something we can do moving forward. But just to be realistic, between early June, which was the first time they thought they'd be able to look at this, and August, when a finished 5-year plan for HIV in San Francisco needs to be back to you all to review, to provide a letter of concurrence, that is an extremely short period of time for that kind of task. And so so just being clear about, you know, forming a group and getting people together. I mean, we can do that, but we're also trying to figure out if there are any specific ideas of what we could actually propose for the next 5 years that we can sort of bring to that group to have them be jump-started. I think that's where we got into this bigger conversation that feels like overwhelming for now, because we're not trying to decide that now, but we are trying to use this opportunity with all of you on your call, on this call, with all your smart ideas to kind of brainstorm some things that can be handed to that group for further discussion. Hannah, do you have more things you would say about that?
I would just say there was a webinar hosted by the CDC about this larger initiative and the planning process. And we asked the question about, you know, how can we be expected to do this meaningful planning during this time? And especially because, you know, it's supposed to be community led. And, you know, was there any talk on the federal level to push the timeline forward, basically, or back, it's back forward. Anyways, so that it's not due, the plan is not due in September. And the response was that that was not really something they had thought about, or that was not in their plan to do. And so we're still aiming for this September date. However, it's a living document. And so whatever we submit in CDC, you know, throughout the implementation period, we'll have to update and revise. And so, you know, there is a timeline and there is a rush, but, you know, things will change as we move forward. And if that means that this collaboration, this work group goes, you know, beyond the next year, the next 5 years, anything like that, that's also possible. So just wanted to say that it doesn't seem like the right time to do this, and we have to move forward.
Yeah. It may be that the best thing to do is say, we want to form this joint group that will continue to discuss these issues over time and update this living document. And in the meantime, we have the ideas that have already been collected based on everything done up to date. And many of you have probably seen the draft that was submitted in December, which basically synthesized existing ideas and information, and integrating into that everything that's come from the community engagement processes that are going on through this RFP I mentioned, and the work that Hannah did and lots of people supported to come up with some innovative ideas that went into that CDC application and the HRSA application, that basically we just kind of put those together and say, for now, this is our plan. If we have to do something by September and turn it in, despite the fact that we're all dealing with a pandemic, then this is the best we can do for now. And we're committed to having this joint group work on refining and updating this for years to come. And that's what the plan is. And I mean, for me personally, I think that would be a perfectly reasonable response, but I don't make that decision. And that's what we wanted to bring to you all to see if that seemed, that or some other version seemed like the right path, given that the next time we talk, it might be it might be when you're asked to concur that the plan is good.
Any comments or feedback on what Shelley just presented? Mike Schreiber says that's a great idea. I concur. I think that's a great idea. I think we're trying to push a lot for whatever, you know, for our limited resources and ability right now. So I think it's a good idea. Let's write it down, let's sign off on it, and let's move forward with it. But anybody else?
So, hey, this is Thomas. Can you just, I felt like that was a lot of words and I kind of lost the nuance. What was the, can you boil it back? What's the end point?
Yeah, sorry, yes. Thinking while I'm speaking. The end point would be, I think that to say we're going to take the material that we already have from the past, all the work that's been done to date, we integrate in any new ideas from the HRSA and CDC applications that already went in, make sure those are a part of the plan. We integrate any ideas we can from the additional community engagement work that's been happening, and we draft that into the plan, and we use this as an opportunity to establish a joint working group or subcommittee or whatever it would be called between HCPC and Getting to Zero, a single group with membership from both bodies that's committing to continuing to work on these collaboration issues and update the plan moving forward, but that the plan for September is essentially what we've got with those pieces that I just named and the establishment of this group to work moving forward. And that's kind of what we agree is doable between now and August when we need to submit for letter of concurrence.
So with Shelley just summarized, if y'all can just put a little thumbs up, if you agree to that, we can just move forward with that plan. And if you're on the phone, you just say, hey, that sounds cool. Then we can just move forward with that and just be like, that's it. We're committing to this for the next few months. Great. Awesome. Sounds like folks are on board. Great. Thank you. Got enough folks saying so. Anything else, Shelley and Hannah, before we end the meeting?
Not for me.
All right. Thank you all. Thank you all for the meeting. Thanks for attending. Next meeting date is scheduled for June 22nd at 4:00. Once again, we'll try the Zoom thing again, but thank you so much for bearing with us as we iron out some kinks. Remember, our committees are still meeting, so please attend those committees as well. And then you should be hearing some more emails from staff moving forward about next month. Right. Thank you so much, everyone. Please enjoy. Wait, Mark. What's that?
And don't forget, everyone who's on steering, we do have a steering committee meeting this Thursday. The agenda should probably be going out tomorrow morning.
That's right. Steering's happening on Thursday as well. All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.
Have a good weekend.